Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chuck Albright. I'm sitting in for Jim Hart tonight. He's a little under the weather. Welcome to the EAL Radio Show. We're coming to you live from many different locations. That's what's so amazing about cyber broadcasting. Our hosts and listeners are in many locations, but come together as one every Monday at this time. We're glad you're listening. Hope you join in on the discussion. Neil has mentioned that our little radio show is Kitchen Table Radio. Perhaps it does sound a little homespun with the lack of all that sophisticated radio equipment the big guys have, but it seems to be working. I think the biggest reason for its popularity is the subject we cover, Eastern Airlines. Eastern has always been an airline of first, and the radio show is carrying on that tradition, as we sure the new Eastern will continue to do so. With each show that goes into our radio broadcast archive, it tells us that Eastern people enjoy talking and hearing about the old and the new. And we'd like to think of our beloved Eastern airline. We hope you will participate and board our airplane, a beautiful Boeing 737, smartly painted in the familiar paint aviary of the old Eastern, every Monday at this time, and be part of the show. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is call us at 213-816-1611, and it will put you on Neil Producer's board. You can open your mic, the telephone, and you can tell us what's on your mind, or you might want to add to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil opens your phone connection to join the live conversation, you will need to press the number 1 on your phone keypad to join in. Those who can't listen in on the computer can still hear and participate by calling the number we just heard, 213-816-1611. Also, keep in mind that your telephone and microphone picks up any noise that might be in the background, so be sure to mute your phone or keep quiet as possible during the broadcast. Now let's join flight 256 and it awaits takeoff clearance from the Miami Tower. Eastern flight 256, you're cleared for takeoff.
Miami Tower, Eastern 257, did you call us?
No, Eastern 256, you're cleared to take off.
Roger, Miami Tower. Eastern 256, changed our flight number and we're 256 now, so we are cleared to go. We're on the roll.
Roger that.
On tonight's broadcast, we would like to share with you the sad news of the passing of our very good friend and radio show host, Captain Jim Graybill. Jim was honored in the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame, and at this time, we would like to share this audio tribute about Jim's life.
As a boy, Jim Graybill had a dream of flying. James Lewis Graybill was born at home in Mason County, Kentucky on February 4, 1933, to parents Dorothy Armstrong Boyd and Charles Grant Graybill. The family, with Jim and sister Charlotte, moved to Shelby County, where they were tobacco and dairy farmers. Jim's parents could not comprehend why their son J.L., as he was called, always ran around with two sticks held together, pretending to fly his plane. Flight was relatively unknown in rural Kentucky, and his ambition to fly was viewed as frivolous. At age 10, Jim faced the tragedy of losing his mother, Dorothy. She was only 41 years old. This left Jim, Charlotte, and their dad, Charlie, without someone to care for the house and family. Grandma Graybill moved in to help out. Jim was quite an athlete during his school years. His football ability won him the praise of the entire Shelbyville community. He was captain of the high school football team and was honorable mention in the all-state football team his junior and senior year. He also worked at many jobs. The one he loved best was washing airplanes in exchange for flight instruction at Shelbyville's airfield. He eventually soloed off runway 22 at Bluegrass Field on his 16th birthday. The plans to be an airline pilot were still viewed as foolish ambition by family members. After graduation from Shelbyville High School, it was on to the University of Kentucky, where Jim majored in engineering. One year spent at Parks College, the University of St. Louis, further fueled his flying dreams. When the Korean War broke out, Jim enlisted in the United States Marine Corps and headed for boot camp at Parris Island, where he won his platoon's Honor Man Award and, as a result, was assigned as a drill instructor. Jim applied for and was approved for flight school in Pensacola, but the orders did not get signed fast enough, so Jim was on to San Diego and the Korean War, where he would spend 14 very hot and very cold months in Korea, and where he received the Purple Heart and a battlefield commission of captain. After his time of service, Jim came home to family and friends and UK to finish his degree. While at UK, Jim married his high school sweetheart, and together they had three children, Connie, John, and Kathy. Jim's dream of flying full-time was never very far away. Between working as an assistant plant engineer at Mengel in Louisville, Kentucky, and teaching flying at Bowman Field, he started sending out resumes to airlines in hopes of getting an interview. He had been encouraged by Dick Malloy, owner of Kentucky Flying Service, to try for an airline job. By now, he had his commercial, instrument, multi-engine ratings, as well as being a certified flight instructor. Job change moved the Graybills from Shelbyville to Lexington, where Jim was employed by Square D. He also instructed at Bomar Flying Service at Bluegrass Field. Then, after many trips to the post office and many not hiring letters, there was the telegram inviting him to report to Miami for a pilot interview with Eastern Airlines. Bob Cole, Kentucky Aviation Museum docent and former Eastern ticket agent, remembers giving Jim his pass to fly to Miami, where Jim was hired by Eastern Airlines. Jim's career with Eastern lasted more than 30 years. It started with an assignment to Charlotte, North Carolina, as a co-pilot on the Martin 404 and Convair 440. Over the course of his service with the airline, his assigned bases included Washington, D.C., Chicago, Miami, and Atlanta. During this time, he flew the Lockheed Electra, the DC-7B, and Boeing 727 as flight engineer and co-pilot. In December 1968, the milestone year, Jim checked out as captain on the Convair 440 and the following year added the Electra to his logbook. He continued on as a pilot in command on the 727, the DC-9, the Lockheed L-1011, as well as the Boeing 757 and 767. Jim was assigned to the Eastern Flight Training Department in Miami in 1979 as an instructor and check captain on the B-727 and DC-9. Scheduling during this time dictated that he spend 3 months in the Miami Training Department, followed by 1 month flying the line out of the home base in Atlanta. The plan continued until March 4, 1989, when Eastern pilots, flight attendants, ramp service, and mechanics went on strike to protest the airline's management's anti-labor tactics. Jim did not cross the picket line, and within 2 years, Eastern Airlines shut down. Jim went to Europe and flew the Boeing 757 for Air Holland, but home and family beckoned. It was on to Savannah, Georgia, where he became an FAA pilot examiner and instructor on the Gulfstream 4 for Flight Safety International. Along about 1992, a former student from his days at Bowman Field in Louisville contacted Jim. She was moving to Savannah and needed his help in upgrading her logbook. Jim and Beverly were married in 1999. They now live in Nicholasville with their basset hound, Sam. A stepson and a couple of grandkids came along with the deal, and now Jim has another jarhead to trade Marine Corps stories with, Major John Andrew Forrest, USMC, retired. One of Jim's five grandchildren, granddaughter Lindsay Henry, joined the aviation family when she graduated from ASA Flight Attendant School. She made her granddad very, very proud. While Jim has seen his share of honors and achievements during his 33,000 hours of flying, he considers the honor of being enshrined in the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame to be the pinnacle of awards. It is therefore fitting that James Lewis Graybill, a boy with a dream and a man who achieved his dream of being an airline pilot, be enshrined into the official Aviation Hall of Fame of the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
The author of this beautiful poem was John Gillespie Mackey, Jr. During the desperate days of the Battle of Britain, hundreds of Americans crossed the border into Canada to enlist with the Royal Canadian Air Force, knowingly breaking the law, but with a tacit approval, and then still officially neutral United States government, they volunteered to fight the Nazis. John Gillespie Maggie, Jr., was one such American, born in Shanghai, China in 1922 to an English mother and a Scottish-Irish-American father. Maggie was 18 years old when he entered flight training. Within the year, he was sent to England and posted to a newly formed number 412 squadron, fighter squadron, RCAF, which was activated at Digby, England on 30 June 1941. He was qualified on and flew the Supermarine Spitfire, flying fighter sweeps over France and air defense over England against the German Luftwaffe. He rose to the rank of pilot officer. On 3 September 1941, Maggie flew a high altitude, 30,000 feet, test flight in a newer model of the Spitfire V. As he orbited and climbed upward, he was struck with the inspiration of a poem, "To Touch the Face of God." Chuck.
Once back on the ground, he wrote a letter to his parents, and then he commented, "I'm enclosing a verse I wrote the other day. It started at 30,000 feet and was finished soon after I landed. On the back of the letter, he had jotted down this poem, High Flight." Just 3 months later, on 11 December 1941, only 3 days after the U.S. entered World War II, pilot officer John Gillespie Maggie Jr. was killed. The Spitfire V he was flying, a VZ-8, collided with an Oxford trainer from Canwell Airfield flown by one Ernest Ogby. The midair happened over a village of Rottingham, which lies between RAF Canwell and RAF Digby. In the county of Lincolnshire, about 400 feet AGL at 11:30, John was descending in the clouds. At the inquiry, a farmer testified he saw the Spitfire pilot struggling to push back the canopy. The pilot, he said, finally stood up to jump from the plane. John, however, was too close to the ground for his parachute to open. He died instantly. He was 19 years old.
The reason that we pay tribute to Jim Graybill, Captain Jim Graybill, tonight is because he was one of us. He was one of ours, I should say. And when I say ours, he was one of the Eastern family, the Eastern employees, and he was one of our hosts. Jim appeared with us on several of our radio shows. Always enjoyed participating, and most of the time he would call me after the show, and we would chat for a little bit, a few minutes, and he would tell me what he was up to and talked about the show and a future broadcast, and I always enjoyed that telephone ring at the end of our show, because I knew it was either Jim Graybill or either Chuck Albright. And Chuck calls me pretty much most of the time. He calls me before the show. But Jim was always welcomed on our radio show, and we certainly will miss him. And the song John Denver sang, and you heard the background of John Gillespie McGee, and how he wrote the song now that has become the popular song, or the song that we sing in remembrance of those that have passed on that were pilots, aviators. And we had a special poem that was written by one of our other hosts on our radio show. And she and her husband, Don, I'm speaking now of Dorothy Gagnon and Don Gagnon. She wrote a poem that she sent to me, and because she can't be here tonight, I thought I would read it. And it's a poem, it's a memorial poem, a poem for the loss of one of our Eastern family friends, as she has written. "I am not away. I am with you all the time, every day. Do not cry for me as I'm still here, in your thoughts and in your memories, to calm your fears. Look for me amongst the stars up in the sky. I will be there for you. Do not cry. Just like the beautiful stars that shine so bright, I will be there for you if you need me every night. And the poem is written by Dorothy Cronin Gagnon. Thank you so much, Dorothy. And I appreciate you sending that. And I'm sure the family of Jim Craybill would say thank you also. And for all the thoughts that all of our radio show hosts have expressed to me, and I want to pass that on. I have some interesting stories that I would like to tell about my experiences and guest experiences, or share some war stories that I had with Jim Craybill. Great guy. I guess I met Jim, and I don't know what flight or what year, but it was back during the seat-swapping days, as we called them, when the first officer and second officer would swap seats on the Boeing 727 trips. I suppose that's where I first met Jim. But later on, Jim gave me a call because he knew that I had a real estate company that operated several offices in Atlanta and in the county just to the north, Hall County and Forsyth County, the two counties. And primarily, I sold property on Lake Lanier. And I guess I must have mentioned that to Jim on one of our trips, saying, hey, you know, I sell Lake Lanier. And he eventually called me and said, hey, Neil, how about meeting me up on Lake Lanier at my little cabin that I have there? And I want to show it to you because I want to sell it. And I said, sure, Jim. So we met there, and I can still remember almost in my mind what that little house looked like. It's cabin. It's a screened porch in the back, and the Lake Lanier right behind it, just within walking distance, right on the water. And so I did list the property for Jim, and I believe we eventually sold it. I'm not sure, because that's looking back so many years ago. So that's my first memory of Jim Craybill, and he getting in touch with me, and I hoped I was able to help him in selling the house, the cottage on the lake. And then the next time I had the privilege of flying with Jim, of not flying with Jim, but a little episode that happened, and we both laughed about it. Not only any time we saw each other while we were working with Eastern, but also on the radio show, because Jim and I both chuckled. Jim chuckled and I chuckled about what happened in Portland, Oregon. And because I was flying captain on the Boeing 757, and Jim was too. And I had flown the airplane in. That was the airplane Jim was to fly out the next day. We landed the airplane and went to the hotel, had our layover, and took our flight the next day, whatever flight it was, airplane 757. But Jim had taken our airplane that we had left overnight on his trip to originate from Portland to Seattle, and then back to Atlanta the next day. So I didn't know about this, but Jim told me about the airplane that I handed off to him. And that airplane, 757, and it was the takeoff, really, that got Jim excited. because on takeoff, blew one of the main tires, right? The speed we call V1, which is the speed that we have got to make a decision and either to abort the takeoff and or either after V1 the continued departure. Of course, Jim elected to abort the takeoff. And it was a loud sound, he said, and of course, when he taxied back, got back to the gate there in Portland, Oregon, he discovered his main wheels had blown out on that 757. But if any captain could handle a situation like that, it was a guy like Jim. Mark, experienced pilot, his experiences so with Eastern and outside the after Eastern shut down, of course, during. I remember him calling into the radio show so many times and sharing his experiences of being conducted. And I know that Jim had
Hey, Neil, you're breaking up. Your voice is going in and out.
Okay. Is it still doing that?
Yeah, you have some background noise, Neil.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap mine up real fast here. It was great to have him as a host of our radio show. And I certainly enjoyed the time that we had at this time because he was in Atlanta and I'm in Jacksonville. The time we shared over the telephone after several of our radio shows. Any comments about the show tonight? Anyone? We've got several people that are on the board here and if you would like to tell us anything, just go ahead and talk. I've opened all the microphones, which we have many that are on today. Am I still breaking up?
Yes.
Okay, how about George, you taking over from this point on?
Well, I never flew or knew of Jim until, you know, we did the show. And but other than that, I had never flown with him. I guess I was too junior. But so I really don't have anything to add onto what you had said, Neil. I don't know. Perhaps Steve might have something.
Yes, I lived in Hilton Head, and I was looking for an opportunity. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but somebody told me that Jim Graybill worked for Flight Safety in Savannah. So I went over there to apply for a job because I was told that it would be a good idea if I got a G4 rating. And so I knew I would have to get it from Flight Safety, and one way to get it would have been to apply for an instructor job on the G4, and they would give me a type rating on it. So the first thing that Jim asked me was, says, "Well, do you have an instructor's rating?" And I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, you'll need that to come to work here." So I never did get it, and I went on to do something else, but that was my last encounter with Jim.
Can you hear? Can you hear me? Steve, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now, Lee.
Okay.
Neil.
I want to mention the fact that we have got several of our associations, EARA, which, by the way, we have Vito Borelli with us tonight, REPA, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, the Silverliners, and they do a great job of keeping track of those that have passed away, and the EARA keeps a great follow. They really follow up and put in all of those that have passed on in their EARA newspaper. Vito, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Neil.
Yeah. How does that go about? How do you do that?
We get a listing from the PBGC every month, and they give us a listing of all the persons that have passed away of former Eastern people, and that's how we get all those names, whether they're pilots or IAM people or pilots or flight attendants or whatever. And that's how we get that list from them, and as a result of that, we publish that every month in our newspaper for the benefit of all the retirees that know all these people. So that's how we get the list.
That's great. That's great, Vito. And REPA does a similar thing, that any of the pilots passing away, people like, I just recently discovered one of the pilots that had passed away here in the Jacksonville area, and I forwarded that to Jim Holder and Jerry Frost up in Atlanta, that put out the Retired Eastern Pilots Association magazine repartee. Also have the website that also carries our radio show, and they put all of those passing pilots on their list. So if you want to see that list, you can easily go to repaonline.com, repaonline.com, and there you can see all of the folks that are on the memorial list, and it dates all the way back to 1928. So if you've thought of a pilot and wanted to know whether that person is still alive or deceased, then I recommend that you go to repaonline.com. The Silverliners also, I'm sure, have a list honoring those Eastern employees that were with Eastern that were flight attendants. So it's great that we have these associations, and the Silver Falcons is another organization that's out there. But all of them keep posted on their news those that have passed on that they know of. And this is one of the ways that we keep the legacy of Eastern alive, is we want to keep track of all of the Eastern people and honor those folks that, like Jim Graybill, that did so much for Eastern while he was flying for the airline and served so well after Eastern folded in a career, and he was a great friend. He really was. And I've got a track that I want to read the original poem, because what you heard tonight, John Denver sing, was a version of that. And I'm going to read that as we play this beautiful instrumental of High Flight. That's what it's called, High Flight. And it's no words to it. I'm going to add the words of the original poem. Bonds of Earth. and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Poem, and you can understand why the aviators. I love this high flight. As a matter of fact, when my partner John Cornei was killed, and they died as a result of a crash in Cumming, Georgia, in 1971. I wrote a letter to the editor of the local newspaper and dedicated it to my best friend, John Cornei. And with my dedication, a few paragraphs that I wrote, I included the High Flight poem because it means so much to those that... have slipped the surly bonds, and also the families, especially the families that, like Beverly, and Beverly, you'll get a copy of our program tonight, and we want to thank you very much for putting up with Jim and being on the, letting him be on our radio show, and as you told me over our telephone conversation, you always made the supper ready for him so that he could eat and have dinner and then join us on the radio show. Thank
that
you so much.
That was the drill on Monday night.
Yes, it was. Who's speaking?
This is Beverly.
Beverly, thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Well, I've been listening. And I appreciate you honoring my husband. I wasn't with him for Eastern Airlines, but I met him in 1959 when he taught me to fly, soloed me, and then went off to Eastern Airlines. And I didn't see him for 32 years. And I went looking for him because after my husband died, I needed to... get my logbook redone, ploy, and finally contract got a hold of him, and the rest is history. So
you know, I meant to ask you the other day, what type of airplane did you learn to fly in, and was that the airplane you soloed, of course?
Ronca 7AC.
A Ronca Champ 7AC.
Yeah, little Champ.
Yep,
yeah, but my favorite one was the Tri-Pacer.
Okay, yeah, that was a great little Piper airplane, four-seater.
Yeah, I like that. Tri-Pacer. I like the tricycle gear.
And
Beverly, that
solo?
Was a great love story.
What field did you solo from, Beverly?
Bowman Field in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, okay, in Louisville.
Yeah.
And Steve or someone had a comment for Beverly?
I just said that was a great love story.
Well, it caused a lot of intrigue and disaster and family gnashing of teeth and threatening and all that, but we lived through it. We had 16 wonderful years of marriage, And I took care of him because, you know, when I had moved to Savannah when he wanted to go, he went back with flight safety. He was quite ill at one point and was in a coma in the hospital, and they never could figure out what was going on with him. But this was kind of the beginning of the heart problems that he had. You could list all of the things that he had go wrong with him, but he kept saying to me that I married a defective husband. But he was great. He was just loved to fly, and so did I. But the day that he came, I was in the hospital having a detached retina in my left eye. That's what kept me from getting back to finishing up my license. First of all, because I couldn't see anymore, but secondly, because he wasn't there to push me along. He came to the hospital room, and he sat across the room, and he said to me that he had finally gotten an invite from Eastern Airlines, and that was then husband and I went down to visit them in when they were in Vienna, Virginia. But that was the last time that I saw him. And so it was 32 years intervening, and the spark was still there.
Yeah. You know, when we first did our radio show, we did a radio show on the Hall of Fame, people that have entered the Hall of Fame. And people like Dick Merrill, and there are so many of the Eastern people that have entered various halls of fame because, as you know, many states like Georgia, Florida, and most states have an aviation museum and associated
Kentucky is where Jim was enshrined in the Aviation Hall of Fame. In fact, if you want to, if just as an aside, Neil, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
if you
look at the Aviation Museum of Kentucky, look up in the upper right-hand corner and hit the Hall of Fame, go to 2010 and Jim Graybill, you'll see the story of his life, and you'll see me as a blonde, although I'm not blonde anymore.
Okay.
And pictures of our dogs, and I'll tell you, as much as I miss him, those our two basset hounds right now are just bereft.
Yeah.
I finally put one of his jackets up on the bed, and when they smelled the jacket, they started wagging their tails. So.
Oh golly! Yeah.
My goodness. That's tough.
Yeah, that's tough, and we enjoyed talking with Jim because when we did our radio show, that episode that dealt with the Hall of Fames around the country, the various halls of fame in aviation, I found out that Jim, I don't know how I found out, maybe Jim called me and told me that he was in the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame. And so we got on and said, okay, Jim, you've got to be on our show and tell us how in the world you get into the Hall of Fame. So, but he did. He was with us on that show, and it's great that we had people like that with Eastern Airlines. So many outstanding people, not only in flight, but I'm sure that if there's other halls of fame, that there's usually an Eastern Airlines employee.
I'm sure that there is. And
we had some remarkable people flying for us and working for Eastern Airlines.
Right. And you mentioned flight safety. That was something that he really loved to do, too, because he loved the G4. And, of course, they're coming out with the bigger models, and he keeps up with that. He was keeping up with that via a good friend there that he had – that he'd done a check ride on. So at least he, I'm sure that when he died that there were wings that looked like an airplane.
Yes.
And took him up.
Yes, yes.
Because he couldn't have gotten there any other way. You know, if he weren't the captain, he wouldn't go.
Oh, yeah. And I apologize.
Well, he put out his hand and he touched the face of God.
That's exactly right. I love High Flight. We've got a couple of plaques here with that on.
I think any pilot that's flown an airplane has got a copy of that poem. And
yeah.
Great poem. And Dorothy also wrote a very, very, very good poem. And thank you, Dorothy,
if you're
listening.
I heard it at the beginning.
Yeah,
at the beginning. He forgot to tell me how to sign on this thing. It took me a while.
Well, you did a good job. I didn't think you'd be with us tonight, Beverly.
Yeah. Well, it was my intention to do that, and eventually I found the right phone number and I called. But
that's good.
I didn't know if you had a way of identifying, but I had had the REPA people put that on the internet for me.
Yeah, Jim Holder did that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they also carry our way of listening to our radio shows, and we certainly appreciate REPA for putting it on their website.
Right.
We've got so many area codes on my board right now, and if anyone would like to join in the conversation, we'd be happy to have you with us. So I know Jim was also very much involved or either attended a lot of the REPA luncheons that they have in Atlanta.
Yes, I took him there so that he could see it. Actually, the day that he died, he had decided that morning that he just didn't feel good enough to get up and be down in East Point by 11 o'clock. We were always arriving late. I never could figure out why he was always late to do something when he was so prompt to get on the airplane. I guess it was the difference between arriving for a luncheon and arriving for a takeoff. So,
yeah, that was a fear that all pilots had when they flew on layovers.
Yeah,
getting up and being on time. And I was late for one flight one time in my 26 years with Eastern. And that's a story within itself. I've got that in one of my stories in my book about how that was resolved. But
well, the story that you told about the flat tire, I have heard many, many times. It was rather a frightening experience for him, but
yes.
He managed. He was very proud that he got that plane back down on the ground.
Yeah. Like I said, he was one pilot that could do that, and I'm glad I didn't have that experience. It wasn't the role wasn't reversed. Don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
I would probably looked at the co-pilot and said, "You got it."
And you traded seats at that point, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
thank you so much, Beverly.
I think it's so nice that you're doing this and dedicating it to him, and I hope that other people will hear it and remember him, because he was the pilot that was the pilot. I mean, there was nobody that flew any better than he did.
Yeah.
And it was a privilege to have had him as an instructor and to have had him for many, many years as a husband. And I just wish he were still here.
Well, thank you so much.
And when the Basset Hounds start bugling, you'll know.
Just tune in on Monday nights, Beverly. You're always welcome. And put one of the dogs on, and we'll listen to the barking.
No, they don't bark. They bugle. You get the actual howl. You know, that's called the howl.
Yeah.
You get two of them together, and it makes a lot of noise.
Someone sent to me today on email, it might have been George Jen, sent to me about the welcoming home of those that were in the military and had been gone, deployed for several months or perhaps years, and how the dogs welcomed those returning soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
And it was incredible to watch that video. It's just, and you almost came to tears, you know, just crying for that dog, the way that dog remembered that person that was returning home, and the love for the person and the dog. So
well,
it was a great video.
Yeah, my two are still waiting for the door to open and Jim to walk
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
When he was, he had to go through rehab for a week or two, and I would take the dogs over to see him every single day, and he could go in there and they would walk around, and it was good because they really missed him. I mean, even more so, I think, than me. I just the dogs are good. They know
yeah.
an awful lot, and they're very comforting.
Well, I hope that Eastern, I know the retired Eastern Pilots Association have great sources of information for you, Beverly.
Oh, I've already gotten it in the mail. It's just absolutely incredible what I have to do. I told my son, I said, oh, I've got another packet of things that I have to do.
Yeah, and for the other organizations, I'm sure they have the same that REPA has.
Yeah.
But any time one of the spouses passes away, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association has a checklist of things for the widower or widowers.
Uh-huh.
And that is really good in order to make sure that there's a great transition there and that everything is covered. So
yeah.
I'm glad they sent that to you.
That's
and,
what I got in the mail today, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether EARA does that or not, or the Silver Liners
I'm not
does
really
it.
Sure. I just opened it up and looked at it. I have just get so much
yeah.
mail that I, you know, I didn't have a chance to go completely through it. But I have a son here who's helping me with all of this, and that's
wonderful, wonderful.
As long as he stays in town and doesn't fly off to Europe to work.
Okay, all right.
I can keep him around long enough to help me. At least Jim is being cremated, and probably at some time in April we will have a memorial service for him. You know, he was a Marine, and the Marine Corps League here is going to do a ceremony for him up in the Canton Cemetery.
Okay.
And then there will be
well,
a
you'll
reception.
Keep us posted then, please, and there
yep.
may be some that want to attend that service, and we'd love to, as soon as you find out the plans, then let us know, Beverly, and we'll put it on
the
website, and we'll talk about it on our radio.
I appreciate it, Neil, and thank you so much.
Thank you for being with
You're
us.
You're about to sign off.
Well, we're getting close to it. I want to find out if there's any other thoughts from any of our other listeners or hosts. Please speak up. Well, since we don't have any other thoughts, then we'll put this puppy on the ground and land this airplane. Let's see if I can land it. We took off. We were in the air. And so let's see if we can land this airplane. That's not the way I want to land it. I want to land it this way.
I thought this was my leg, Neil.
All right. Let's see what kind of landing you're going to do. Okay.
That
well,
that was
like
a great landing, Captain Steve.
That was a good one.
We had a great show tonight, folks. I know it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the Eastern family. And now we can talk about the new Eastern Airlines. And you know, we've truly earned the title of Radio Voice of Eastern Airlines. It's all because of you, the callers, the listeners, guests, and hosts. We hope you will join us next Monday, March 21st, when we broadcast our 258th show traveling aboard our Eastern Radio show, Boeing 737-800. From all of us here, we say good night, Eastern, and we love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night,
listeners.
Eastern.
Thank you.
We love you.
I'll be there again. Good night.